If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, a full reaction, recap, and conversation over the next hour to Conference Championship Sunday in the National Football League. Super Bowl 58 is set. It's a rematch of a Super Bowl we saw 5 years ago. That one was in Miami between the San Francisco 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs. They will face off to end out the 2023 NFL season this Super Bowl Sunday, 13 days away in Las Vegas. We thank you for joining us here on Football Full Circle on this Monday. He is the mastermind of the pigskin. It's Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. So, Joe, Super Bowl 58 will be a Super Bowl 54 rematch between the 49ers and the Chiefs. That is what we know. How we reach those conclusions, what the lines look like for Super Bowl Sunday, that is our task, that is our charge to break down here up until 1 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Two great games yesterday, Ben. Amazing outcomes. Kansas City and Travis Kelce, and more importantly, Patrick Mahomes just knocking off Baltimore. They did it and grinded it out. Had a 17-7 lead. Give up only basically 3 second-half points en route to the 7-point win. And they did it the way they've done it all season long. Moving the football on the ground, but also that defense stepping up. And Lamar Jackson, unfortunately, cannot answer the bell. Critical interception in the second half that really changed the momentum of that ball game. And then what could you say about Detroit? I think if you would have asked Detroit at the start of this week and the start of the game, if you had a 24-7 first half lead, do you think you win the ball game? I think Dan Campbell would have signed up and said absolutely. But turnovers led to San Francisco coming back into that ball game and having a second half lead of 10 points. And then Dan Campbell with the coaching decisions really cost the Detroit Lions that ball game.
So we will talk about all of that here over the next 58 minutes or so. How the conference championship games ended the way they did. The decisions by the coaching staff, the play on the field, what was executed or what was not that resulted in a conference championship in the AFC and the NFC and a square off in Super Bowl 58, 13 days away in Las Vegas. Before we get to all of that, we bring in our Sports Grid radio audience here. It is live on Sirius XM. XM channel 159. That's the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM. He is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. This is a Monday following Conference Championship Sunday in the NFL right here on Football Full Circle. Joe, let's go to the Sunday nightcap in Santa Clara. The Detroit Lions had a 24-7 lead at the halftime break against the number one seed in the NFC, the San Francisco 49ers. The Lions had a 17-point advantage. They were 30 minutes away from their first ever Super Bowl appearance. And then everything that could go poorly in the second half for the Lions did. Everything that could go the way of San Francisco also did. And some questionable and debated coaching decisions made by Detroit's Dan Campbell leads to a San Francisco victory 34-31. The Lions do cover as a 7.5-point underdog. The pregame total of 53.5 does go over. The Niners are back into a Super Bowl for the second time in the last 5 NFL seasons. The Lions come up short in a drastic way, in one that will hurt, Joe, the failure in the falter in the Motor City for the entirety of the offseason. It was the largest ever comeback in conference championship game in NFL history, the largest ever halftime deficit that was overcome by this San Francisco side at 17 points. Ultimately, Joe, how do you think that second half played out for the 49ers to end as an NFC champion once again?
Yeah, they just took care of business and created opportunities. And what I mean by that is obviously turnover margin was critical in the second half. The fumble, the risk in terms of the both fourth down conversion attempts, even though they technically don't count as turnovers, that's a turnover in terms of possession. So, the 49ers defense stepped up. Granted, there were some drops and missed opportunities by the Detroit Lions, but credit Brock Purdy, credit the whole defense of the San Francisco 49ers for buckling down and giving their offense an opportunity to pull that ball game out. And when the chips are in the middle of the table, they just made more plays. It is unfortunate because, again, from a game plan perspective, Ben, for Detroit to jump out 14-0, especially on the road, they could then potentially run the football, sustain drives, and keep Brock Purdy on the sidelines, and they just could not maintain their composure. They were a young football team, and I think that showed in the second half of that ball game last night.
So when it gets down to it, Joe, Dan Campbell and his fourth down decisions will be under the microscope for the next few weeks and maybe for the entirety of the offseason in the greater Detroit, Michigan area. Two fourth down tries for the Lions that did not work out. One on their opening offensive drive in the third quarter, one when they were down 27-24. Instead of electing to try a field goal from about 48 yards out that could have tied the game at 27-all midway through the fourth, they go for it. They do not convert. They did not convert on either of the two fourth down attempts, Joe, in the second half. What did you make of Dan Campbell's decision making?
Well, again, the first decision, the first fourth down and three, that's where I think he made a poor choice, Ben. And the reason why I say that is coming out of the half and coming in terms of the third quarter, you're up 14 points. You have an opportunity to go up by three scores, really put the pressure on San Francisco. At that particular point, he did not have to allow them back into the ballgame in regards to momentum. That's where I think he made the mistake. Down the 3 points where he goes for it, I don't have a problem with that fourth down, but the one that I do have is where you have a double-digit lead, you always want to force and put the pressure on the opposing offense. At that particular point, you don't want to give them an opportunity to see the light at the end of the tunnel, and I think that's where he failed in terms of the fourth down attempts. First one, I think he should have kicked it. Second one, I don't have that bad of a problem because they trailed in that matchup.
And you know what's interesting, Joe, and I think it's a good point, because a lot of the fourth down conversations, and some people will point to analytics and what is a more favorable outcome in the context that is necessary. Well, part of the pro of going for it on fourth down and trusting in your team to execute is that if you do execute the given play and you convert fourth down, you give yourself a better chance to score a touchdown, which would have given the Lions a lead or a three touchdown lead early on. And at least on the first one, on a pass to Josh Reynolds that was just flat out dropped, the execution should have been there, and it was not. It has been Detroit's mentality under Dan Campbell. And a lot of people will say, well, if it's been their mentality all along and it's what they did to get to this significant stage, then it should be what they do. I agree in essence for your overall organization, but context is important. Doing that week four against a sub-500 team when you are at home is not the same context nor situation to a conference championship game in the second half with a Super Bowl berth on the line. And yet, regardless of how you feel about Dan Campbell's decisions, I still do not believe they were the most costly plays in that second half, that had the Lions get upset in a way they did in those final two quarters. We'll discuss all of that and more as we continue our review of Conference Championship Sunday next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. It's a Monday, the day following Conference Championship Sunday in the National Football League. We look back on both the AFC and the NFC title games. What happened? Who advanced to a Super Bowl and whose season comes to a close yesterday. So, Joe, a lot of the conversation on this Monday for the next few days around any of the NFL talk shows that you might take in is going to be Dan Campbell's decisions to go for it on fourth down twice in the second half. Once when they could have extended the lead 2-3 scores potentially, and of course late in the game in the fourth quarter, passing up the chance to tie it at 27-all. They did not convert on either of those two fourth down tries. Again, Joe, I think the argument is there to say that Dan Campbell should have taken the points either time. I am just arguing that neither of those decisions is what ultimately cost Detroit the game. I would highlight the throw to Kendall Vildor's face mask that bounced up in the air and ended in a 51-yard completion of Brandon Ayuk that should have been Brock Purdy's second interception of the game when Detroit was up by two touchdowns. Ultimately, a few plays later, Purdy found Ayuk again, this time in the end zone. I would highlight then the ensuing offensive play for Detroit. Jahmyr Gibbs fumbles the exchange, never really has any control of it, and fumbles the football inside Detroit's own 25-yard line. Four plays later, San Francisco ties the game at 24-all. I would highlight Josh Reynolds late in the third quarter as Detroit was trying to stem some of this 49ers momentum on a 3rd and 9 wide open across the middle of the field where Jared Goff put it right into his stomach, and it was his second costly drop in the second half. I think those plays, Joe, had a greater significance on the outcome of the game than Dan Campbell's decisions to go for it on fourth down.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you have to make plays, right? It's not one play. It's a handful of plays that ultimately end up with the win or the loss for both the offense and the defense. I think the play to Ayuk, I mean, the kid's got to catch that ball. It's right in his hands, right? Wasn't there a flag on that play, too? So even if he catches it, potentially San Francisco still has the ball in terms of that situation. Not sure, but it doesn't matter. You got to catch the interception. They did a great job in the first half of creating opportunities. I think the Gibbs situation, whether he had the ball or not, and here's what we could break down too. You don't go back to Gibbs. I mean, I understand the youngster fumbled the football, but he's one of the most dynamic players on your team, right? You're trying to win the ball game. You don't try and get the kid back into the ball game from a momentum perspective in the short to intermediate passing game. You just completely keep him on the sidelines and don't allow him another touch the rest of the way. I think that's where maybe they faltered as well in terms of, hey, you know, it's about bouncing back from mistakes. You know, it didn't cost you the game at that particular point. You still have to try and win it, and he's one of your best playmakers. So, yeah, you can even throw that into the mix of plays that really are a little bit of a head scratcher.
I would throw in another coaching decision, and that was the run on 3rd and goal from the 1 with just over a minute remaining when Detroit had all 3 of its timeouts. And I thought Greg Olsen, of course, who was the TV analyst for the Fox game broadcast, did a great job from even well before that, under 5 minutes remaining in the game, clearly explaining to the audience the Lions needed to maintain all 3 of its timeouts if they wanted to have any shot at advancing to a Super Bowl. So you call a run there peculiarly when you really could not afford to burn a timeout, of which they had to do. I thought those decisions mattered more for Detroit than even the fourth down decisions, which again, maybe are the right call and maybe not, right? Detroit had gone for it 20 times throughout the season, including twice in the playoffs, inside their opponent's territory, in positive field position. And both of these fourth down attempts were inside San Francisco's 30-yard line. They were 17 of 20, 85% converting both in the postseason. Michael Badgley, the Lions kicker, had only been with this Detroit franchise for 6 games this year, had only attempted 2 40-plus yard field goal attempts throughout the season. He did make both, but through his career, just about 77% from 40 yards. So it's not a sure thing that either of the 2 field goal tries would have been good. And Joe, that's part of the discussion of why we have these debates, why going for it on fourth down, why the attempt to convert is always such a hotly debated thing is because it's the unknown. When the play happens where the ball ricochets off Kendall Vildor's face mask and into the arms of Brandon Ayuk, that was the finite conclusion. When Jahmyr Gibbs fumbles the football and the Niners score four plays later, that's the finite conclusion. It's the uncertainty of what could have or may have happened if the Lions decided to kick it on fourth down or ultimately try to convert with the negative opportunity happening. So that's the Detroit standpoint. But Joe, you look at the San Francisco 49ers. They became the Super Bowl co-favorites back in week number three. They were the NFC Championship favorites after week number one. They really started to pull away from the pack entering the final month and a half of the NFL regular season. There was a $2 difference for San Francisco's Super Bowl 58 outright price at the end of week 13 than from the 31 other clubs in the National Football League. The Niners were expected to be here, their fourth NFC Championship game appearance in the last 5 years, and now San Francisco gets another shot at a Lombardi Trophy, which they have not won since 1994, in a Super Bowl once again against Kansas City.
Yeah, but they have the playmakers, you know, to really put the pressure on that Kansas City defense. And that's where Lamar Jackson and Baltimore were a little inconsistent yesterday as it related to the passing attack. Zay Flowers stepped up. But outside of Zay Flowers, they did not have a significant offensive weapon, right? They tried to get Odell involved in the final couple of drives. But outside of that, they were a one-trick pony. I think with San Francisco, it's multiple levels of players, right? Another week for Deebo Samuel to potentially heal up. Now, he had 8 receptions, 89 yards, but he only ran it for like 3 carries for 7. He should be healthy. Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Ayuk. I mean, there are a multitude of playmakers. And if Brock Purdy, you know, plays like he did for much of the regular season, they are going to be a very difficult out. It should be a great game. And styles make fights, right? This Kansas City defense isn't as explosive, but that defense is very opportunistic as well. Curious to see how San Francisco challenges them from an offensive perspective.
Absolutely so. The 49ers back into a Super Bowl. They were there in Super Bowl 54. Yesterday, Joe, was San Francisco's 8th conference title game appearance since that last Lombardi Trophy in 1994. The 49ers have one of the richest pedigrees in terms of postseason success of any team in NFL history. 5 Lombardi trophies, a 39-24 playoff record in their 78 seasons. The likes of Joe Montana and Jerry Rice and Steve Young, they fill the halls by the bay, and yet San Francisco has had its opportunities. On Super Bowl Sunday in just under 2 weeks, it will be their 3rd Super Bowl appearance since 1994, and what has failed them at this point is that Lombardi Trophy. Brock Purdy, Joe, made the plays when it mattered most once again, mainly with his legs this week. 5 carries, 48 yards, and including significant scramble after scramble in the fourth and final quarter to really put the game out of reach from Detroit trying to make its way back in.
Yeah, and Brock Purdy rebounded as well, right? Didn't play well potentially in the first half of that ballgame. Critical interception, bounces back, and has really learned from his mistakes in back-to-back weeks now. When the chips were on the line and when his team was fighting for a Super Bowl and NFC Championship berth, he led the comeback, and he did engineer those drives. So he's erased all the doubt right now. He's not a game manager. He's an elite quarterback, and they're going to need him to step up now. I want to see if San Francisco could be the first team to tack a 30-point spot on that KC defense.
We shall see. They scored 34 against Detroit, all 27 of those points coming in the second half, holding the Lions to only a touchdown and when it was a little bit too late. That's the NFC side of things. The AFC Championship game recap next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. So, after a dramatic and historic comeback, overcoming the largest halftime deficit to ever win a conference championship in NFL postseason history, the San Francisco 49ers, down 17 at the break, come back to beat the Detroit Lions 34-31 in the NFC title game. They will represent the NFC in Super Bowl 58 in just 13 days out in Viva Las Vegas. And they will see a familiar foe on the other side, a rematch of Super Bowl 54 against the Kansas City Chiefs. Joe, it was KC on the road in the Charm City against Baltimore that played the game it had to, relying on its defense under Steve Spagnuolo once again to earn its fourth Super Bowl trip in the last five NFL seasons. Six consecutive years with Patrick Mahomes as the starting quarterback, the Chiefs have made the AFC title game all six seasons, and for the fourth time in that span, the fourth time in the last 5 years, Kansas City will represent the AFC in a Super Bowl. 17-10, the victory for KC. They won outright as a 4.5-point underdog in Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Pat Mahomes, what, 242, 250 in regards to that ball game, 11 targets straight to Travis Kelce for 100-plus receiving yards. Amazing, right? We talked about the inconsistency of Travis Kelce throughout the year. There were glimpses, highs, but very low lows where he was non-existent in regards to certain game plans. But when the AFC Championship was on the line, nobody could stop that quarterback-to-wide receiver or tight end relationship. And that's why ultimately, Kansas City won, right? They get the turnover by Lamar Jackson with a strip sack early in the second quarter. That allows them to jump up 17-7. And Baltimore just never had any type of momentum, Ben. They tied the ball game up at 7, but they were completely out of sync. Lamar Jackson staring down Zay Flowers. If Zay Flowers wasn't open, there wasn't another offensive weapon that Lamar Jackson felt comfortable with. Didn't go to Rashad Bateman and OBJ until basically, what, 5 minutes left in terms of that ball game? I just don't understand it. We knew that Kansas City was going to take away your number one option. That was the rushing attack with Gus Edwards and the offensive line. You knew that. I mean, that's what great defensive coordinators like Spagnuolo do. They take away your number one option. Why the offensive game plan or coordinators did not adjust, saying, you know what, we have to throw to open up the run, is beyond me. Credit Kansas City. Great game plan they executed. Baltimore did not.
Yeah, and that's really what's going to be one of the perplexing things about the result yesterday. You look at the box score, 16 carries for the Ravens, 81 yards on the ground, average better than 5 yards per carry against the KC defense that all year long, despite how good they have been keeping opponents out of their end zone or from scoring points, despite how great they have been in terms of total defense and passing defense, top five in each one of those metrics, KC ranked outside the top five, top 10, top 15, bottom half of the league in defending the run. And even in the win in Western New York, the Bills put up 182 yards as a team on the ground. And the Ravens had success, but Lamar Jackson had 8 of those 16 carries. Zay Flowers had 2 others. Justice Hill and Gus Edwards combined for just 6 carries, 3 apiece. And Gus Edwards had 20 yards on the ground. Justice Hill, 3 carries for 3 yards. He was really the worst part of the Ravens' rushing attack, but there was success, and it seemed like Todd Monken went away from that. And Lamar Jackson, who is more than likely going to win his second NFL MVP award in the last 5 years, looked a little bit skittish in the pocket. He was sacked 4 times yesterday, a QBR sub 43, one of the worst outings for Lamar Jackson in the entirety of the 2023 NFL season in his first AFC Championship game appearance. And the narrative surrounding Lamar, Joe, about winning the big game. It was Baltimore's first AFC title game since 2012. It was the first time they had ever hosted the AFC Championship game and the first in Lamar Jackson's NFL career. For that to be the effort, for that to be the result, for that to be the level of production was a little bit concerning yesterday for the flock. In a team, Joe, that was just better all year long than anybody they played, physicality, but contained aggression. Four personal foul penalties yesterday. That, of course, is going to add up to a ton of penalty yardage. They had three turnovers, two fumbles, and a costly interception. And both of those second half turnovers, Zay Flowers diving for the pylon in the final minute of the third quarter for L'Jarius Sneed to make a wonderful defensive play and jar that football loose. It was recovered by KC in the end zone for a touchback. And then Lamar Jackson on the ensuing offensive possession, where the Ravens got the football back, Joe, with 10:35 remaining in regulation at their own 1 yard line. And they put together a drive, 12 plays, 74 yards, marching down the field for Lamar Jackson to throw into triple coverage. And what was an easy INT for KC's Deion Bush was a peculiar decision for a guy that really had not made many poor decisions all season long. It was a Ravens team, Joe, that in its most significant moment really kind of faltered on the expectation they had lived up to and even exceeded all year long.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know what you thought, but I'll tell you what I thought watching that ball game. They tie it up at 7. They fall behind. No sense of urgency from the second quarter on. I mean, they never forced tempo. They never felt like they had a really score. It was like, we'll just go along and just sort of rope-a-dope it and see if we could get this into the fourth quarter. There was no offensive aggressiveness, whether it be the rushing attack or the passing attack. And yes, I understand they had success running the football, but again, they built their offensive success also utilizing their weapons. When Mark Andrews was in that lineup, that's the go-to player for Lamar Jackson. They didn't take any real deep shots, and the ones that they did, they took in terms of predictable third down type of situations. They were never aggressive on first down in terms of the play calling. No screen passes. I mean, Justice Hill was catching the football out of the backfield. He had a pretty good day catching the football. Why not utilize that? They didn't utilize it until the game was basically already over. I just don't understand what the offensive identity or the game plan really was going up against that ball club yesterday. Again, it was 7-7. Pat Mahomes had a 10-point lead at halftime. You have to come out of the half saying, you know what? We're going to have minimal possessions. So if you think about minimal possessions of the type of the game that it's trending out, you have to be more aggressive in that type of situation. It seemed like they were less aggressive, Ben.
Yeah, it's a good point, Joe. Again, questionable decision makings for a team under John Harbaugh that often does not have those lapses of judgment and is normally always on the forefront. The Ravens were not yesterday. It's just a matter of how it went. And what's so interesting, Joe, is it seemed like we were in for an all-time AFC title game in the opening quarter and then a couple of minutes of change into that second stanza, because Baltimore had the football first. KC won the toss, deferred to the second half. Baltimore had the football first, went three and out on its opening offensive drive. The Chiefs get the football back. They score right away. The Ravens answer, though, to tie it at 7. All the KC answers that score from Baltimore, taking a 14-7 lead, Joe, under 11 minutes left in the opening half. The Chiefs would score three more points. The Ravens would score three more points. Kansas City was held scoreless in the second half. Joe, if I said that to you, I think your conversation would have been, how much did Baltimore win by, and how easily did they cover as a 4.5-point favorite at home in the AFC Championship game to advance back to their first Super Bowl since 2012? And yet, it was the Chiefs' defense standing tall time and again. And frankly, Joe, a lot of people said leading up to the AFC title game, they said it yesterday, they will say it today. In conclusion, they will say it leading up to Super Bowl 58. You just can't bet against Patrick Mahomes. And there is truth to that, but I think you highlight what the defense did yesterday under Steve Spagnuolo and what they have done all season long. Second best scoring defense, fourth best total defense, fourth best passing defense around the National Football League this year. KC's defense made the plays when it needed to in those two incredibly costly second half turnovers for Baltimore that the Chiefs were able to take advantage of.
Yeah, absolutely. And think about John Harbaugh with the penalties, too. Undisciplined, false starts, defensive penalties, 12 men on the field, not prepared. in terms of certain situations. Now, the defense made adjustments to shut down Pat Mahomes and that offense until basically the last drive with 2 minutes left. That's a great effort. Where did the offensive adjust? That's the problem that I have, and you're absolutely right. And, you know, we saw Lamar Jackson take the ball game over against Houston, right? It was a 10-10 game at half, and he said, you know what, screw this. I'm going to take the ball game over. Did you see that yesterday? Again, glimpses, but no sense of urgency. You lose, you go home. That's it. You know, you have to be in that mindset. This is a title fight. We have to score X amount of points to win it. It doesn't matter what the score is on the scoreboard right now. We have to get to 28, or we have to get to 29, you know, 30 in terms of that situation. They never pushed tempo until it was too late, and that's where I'm shocked with Harbaugh playing at home in terms of that situation.
Yeah, completely agree, Joe. Completely agree. Lamar Jackson made the point, and there were the reports that came out following the divisional round game in which they were tied at 10 at the break against Houston, that he went into that locker room and he lit that place up, saying they could be better. They had to be better. They needed to execute on a higher level to get to the AFC Championship. And that's exactly what they did in the second half, shutting out Houston a weekend ago and scoring 24 points of their own. Lamar Jackson wanted the football. He had four total touchdowns in that game. Wasn't necessarily the case yesterday against KC. And Joe, I say it's not all on Patrick Mahomes, and it's not, but his performance yesterday reminds us why he is one of the all-time greats already. 30 of 39, 241 yards, and a touchdown. And Travis Kelce enters the pantheon of the all-time greats in NFL playoff history as well. 11 grabs yesterday. Now 156 postseason receptions in Kelce's career. That is a new NFL record, surpassing Jerry Rice. More reaction from the AFC Championship game coming your way up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. Six consecutive years, Patrick Mahomes has been the starting quarterback in Kansas City. All six seasons have at least reached the AFC Championship game. And now four times, Joe, it doesn't end in the AFC title game. It goes to a Super Bowl. Kansas City, the last team to reach back-to-back Super Bowls since 2018-19. That was the New England Patriots. The last team to have a chance to win two consecutive Super Bowls since the Patriots in 17 and then in 18. The Patriots, the last team to actually win back-to-back Lombardi trophies. That was 2004 and 2005. And Joe, although this Chiefs team does look different, this was their first AFC Championship game away from Arrowhead in this dynastic six-year run. It's a Chiefs defense that really leads the way as opposed to an offense that averaged at least 28 points per game in the previous five trips to an AFC Championship compared to one right now that barely averages 22 points per game, even including the playoffs. A couple of things remain staples in KC. Andy Reid, of course, as the head coach, Patrick Mahomes, and Travis Kelce. And Joe, when games have mattered the most, when games have carried the most weight, when there has been the most significance tied to a game, those two individuals, the quarterback Mahomes and the tight end Kelce, step up each and every time. Again, Mahomes, 30 of 39, 241 yards, and a touchdown. Clean football yesterday. Travis Kelce, 11 grabs on 11 targets for 116 yards and a touchdown. The 11 receptions for Travis Kelce put him at 156 catches all time in his NFL playoff career. He surpassed Jerry Rice yesterday for the most catches ever in NFL postseason history. And he has been that staple for this Kansas City offense that steps up time and again when the games matter most.
Yeah, and it's incredible. I was thinking this through. Like, you know he's going to Kelce, right? And you still can't stop him in regards to that type of situation. And that was really the breakdown for Baltimore. They had the linebackers, Roquan Smith, Patrick Queen, very athletic, very good in terms of pass coverage. We didn't know how Travis Kelce would be able to get open with those type of potential playmakers in pass coverage, right? But yet, he finds them. They utilize motion. They utilize screen. Outside of Travis Travis Kelce. I mean, Rashee Rice, great, you know, good day. What did he have, 6-7 receptions for 43, 44 yards? Not a 8, but everything was short to intermediate. So yeah, so they did their job on in terms of the corners shutting down the wide receivers. If they could just have maybe only 75% out of the productivity out of Travis Kelce, limit him to maybe 80 yards, maybe they'd win that game. You know, it's amazing in regards to, we always talk about it, you know, defensive schemes in championship games, offensively as well. You look to take away the number one option. Up until that point, it was never really Pat Mahomes' number one option. You could make the right argument Rashee Rice, got into that type of situation. Maybe Mahomes would look to him. But again, it's the comfort level. You know, they have been battle-tested for years, 6 straight AFC championships. He went to them early, often, you know, third down, critical opportunities to sustain drives and keep Lamar Jackson on the sidelines. It's like chip him, double team him. They couldn't stop Travis Kelce yesterday. And, you know, so, you know what? San Francisco in 2 weeks is going to have to do the same thing. Curious to see how they attack it.
Yeah, Sam Laporta had the most receiving yards for the Lions yesterday against the San Francisco 49ers. San Francisco in the first half had zero answers defensively for whatever Detroit was throwing their way. You could see visible frustration on the sidelines from Kyle Shanahan, pretty much asking Steve Wilks, figure this out because we have no answers at the moment. Meanwhile, for Kansas City, very little they could do to contain Travis Kelce. It was chippy. He was instigating. He was having a good time. And when you have 116 yards and a touchdown, it speaks to what Travis Kelce represents in this offense. 4 consecutive AFC championship games now for Travis Kelce in this 6-year run with at least 78 receiving yards, more than 100 twice, 95-plus in 3 of the 4, a touchdown in all 4 of the recent AFC championship games for Kansas City. 5 total touchdowns in that 4-game span. He has been as reliable. And what was so fascinating, Joe, there was so much attention on Travis Kelce throughout this season. There continues to be, of course, because of his girlfriend, Taylor Swift, and that will continue leading up to the Super Bowl. But when the production kind of fell off for Travis Kelce in the final month and a half of the season, there was some conversation about what is next for the tight end in Kansas City. Well, a reemergence perhaps here in the postseason. 71 yards against the Dolphins, 75 yards, 2 touchdowns, snapping a 7-game skid of not getting into the end zone against the Buffalo Bills in the divisional round. And then yesterday, another touchdown and 116 yards on 11 grabs. And Joe, again, it's about trusting your playmakers to come through in those most significant moments. Andy Reid did that. The Ravens called a timeout with 2 minutes and 19 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter. A 3rd-and-9 awaited for KC. The 2-minute warning would be the only other time Baltimore could stop the clock for the remainder of the AFC Championship. And on 3rd-and-9, Marquez Valdez-Scantling leaks out into the backfield in a grab of 32 yards. The redemption reception for MVS, who of course had notable drops early this year, including in that marquee matchup on the Monday Night Football game against Philadelphia. A big moment for Marquez Valdez-Scantling, a big moment for Patrick Mahomes, a big moment for Kansas City, icing an AFC championship for the 4th time in the last 5 seasons. So now, Joe, we project and look forward to Super Bowl 58. The line before the games on Sunday, Joe, before conference championship weekend got underway, in a potential Super Bowl 58 rematch between the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. The projected spread was 3 in favor of San Francisco, the over-under 47.5. The total remains, but now, Joe, the number is only 1.5 in favor of San Fran. And the money line at this moment has 8 cents of difference. -112 for San Francisco, the very, very, very slight favorite. -104 on the other side for KC.
Yeah, interesting breakdown. I do feel that San Francisco deserves to be favored because, again, they're more consistent, I believe, you know, and have more offensive playmakers. But it's Pat Mahomes and it's Travis Kelce. And think about it. I mean, you just break it down. Brock Purdy, George Kittle, Ayuk, Debo Samuel, McCaffrey, Jennings, you sprinkle in there. There's playmakers at every level. Eli Mitchell, right? You look at Kansas City, realistically, Ben, it's Mahomes, Kelce, and Pacheco. Outside of that, that, who do we have? Rice, maybe? You know, it's like, it's almost like the land of misfit toys outside the big three, and yet all they do is step up and win ball games. They do it with defense as well. So how does San Francisco attack that front seven? I think that's why they're slightly favored. They're now battle-tested in back-to-back games where they had to come from behind in their house. I don't think they can afford to fall behind against Pat Mahomes. I don't care what the score is, because he'll kill you in terms of that situation, especially with that defense. So it's critical that I believe the Kansas City scores first, dictates the tempo. But again, you know, Shanahan's done a fantastic job in terms of making second half adjustments. That's going to be the chess match between him and Andy Reid in this ballgame.
And all credit to Kyle Shanahan for making those adjustments and finding something that worked, and to Brock Purdy for playing his most efficient and best football on the most significant moments of the game, a late drive where they needed to take a lead in the fourth quarter in those big spots. But I think, Joe, part of the reason San Francisco is not a three-point favorite, of course, some of that is a narrative. Patrick Mahomes, when he has been an underdog, the Chiefs have been booked as a dog 15 times in the last six NFL seasons since the start of 2018. Mahomes has started that game under center 12 of those 15 occasions, and he is now 9-3 straight up, 10-1-1 against the number. The Chiefs are the best underdog team in the National Football League in the last six NFL seasons as well. So that's a part of the conversation. You can't put the Chiefs and Mahomes as an underdog. We can't bet against Patrick and Travis and Andy as an underdog once again. No doubt, I think that has affected the line and the public perception of what is being bet at this moment. But I think one of the reasons, Joe, that San Francisco, again, who became a co-favorite to win Super Bowl 58 back in week number three, really had some distance week 13 and week 14 in front of the Ravens and the Bills and the Chiefs and the Eagles and the Cowboys by over $2. I think one of the reasons, Joe, it's only minus 112 right now for San Fran and minus 104 on the other side for Kansas City is the Niners, who seemed unbeatable and were so thoroughly dominant, have really had some exposed, you know, vulnerabilities the last couple of weeks against Green Bay, trailing deep into the fourth quarter against the seven seed in the NFC at home, and of course down by 17 at the break against the Detroit Lions yesterday in the NFC Championship game. This San Francisco side, despite all of the talent, has not looked as unbeatable as they were throughout the regular season, Joe, where they won 12 games. All 12 games, they scored at least 27 points. All 12 wins by at least a touchdown. 11 of the 12 by double digits. They have not looked nearly that dominant in postseason play so far.
No, and back-to-back championship games, what did Green Bay and Detroit do? They ran the football effectively, which potentially can mean a big day for Isaiah Pacheco and the rushing attack of the Kansas City Chiefs. And you know what? I think Kansas City would favor a matchup like that, because that's the way they've won ball games all season long, running the football, getting these games into the low 20s, and grinding them out with their defense, whether they're on the road or at home. It doesn't matter. So I that would go right into Kansas City's game plan, because we talked about the lack of offensive weapons. We talk about the explosiveness of San Francisco and how good Kansas City's defense hasn't allowed an opponent over 30 points. Well, on the flip side, their offense really hasn't scored over 30 points all year long. I mean, I'll go back to it again. Another game in the 20s. The only two games that stand out for me, and we would have to look at the schedule, but the game against Las Vegas where they won 35-17, right, where they fell behind by 14 points in the game against the Chargers and Arrowhead. Outside of that, I can't remember a game where Pat Mahomes and the offense put up 30 in back-to-back weeks. Can you?
No, they haven't put up 30 in back-to-back weeks all season long. They have put up 31, in fact, three different times this season, but only three times, and not since that game to end out November on the road in Las Vegas, in which they trailed by multiple scores in the opening half. 41 against the Bears, week number three, and then 31 against the LA Chargers at home toward the end of October. They have also not allowed a team to score 30 points or more against them this year, as Lisi highlighted earlier, but this is a different Chiefs team. Joe, a team during the regular season that averaged 21.5 points per game. That was 15th best, middle of the pack in the NFL. The previous five runs to an AFC championship game, four of them, or three of them, of course, culminating in a Super Bowl. The Chiefs were a top 10 offense at bare minimum, averaging better than 28 points per game all five of those seasons. That's nearly a touchdown of drop-off in terms of offensive production from that scoring output. So this Chiefs team is different, but I think this Chiefs team, Joe, has figured out ways to win and realized what they are this year in 2023, what this rendition of KC is as compared to the teams from 2018 or 2019 in the Super Bowl victory over San Francisco that really propelled the start of this dynastic run in Kansas City. We'll look at it further, the early approach to Super Bowl 58, as we come back on the other side of the break here on Football Full Circle. The Niners, a slight, and we mean very slight, favorite for Las Vegas, less than 2 weeks away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Back for just a few more minutes on Football Full Circle. Super Bowl 58 is set. It's a rematch of Super Bowl 54. That started this run for Kansas City. It was the last Super Bowl appearance for San Francisco. In that game, Joe, played in Miami back in February of 2020, Kansas City was booked as a 1.5-point favorite. Now it's San Francisco who lays 1.5, but it's only 8 cents of difference on the money line, minus 112 in favor of the Niners, minus 104 on the other side for the Chiefs. That total was 53. This one is 47 and a hook. KC won by 11, 31 to 20. They covered as the favored side, the total barely staying under. Joe, what are your early thoughts for this rendition in Super Bowl 58?
Yeah, early I lean to San Francisco, and I lean to the over. Just, and I know it sounds crazy, but again, 47.5 is a light total, and I understand that, you know, both teams have solid defenses. But again, I still think in a Super Bowl setting, you need such a clean ride. And with all the chips in the middle of the table, anything could happen. You know, if a team is trailing, you know that they're not going to be complacent, right? Especially if it's a double-digit number, right? They're always going to push tempo in the second half, which could always lead to interceptions, turnovers, and multiple points. So give me the over. I don't love a side yet. I lean to San Francisco, and I lean to the over, but I'll break it down as these couple of days progress heading into Super Bowl weekend.
Yeah, absolutely so. I'll just say this, based on recent Super Bowl trends, Super Bowl 54 included. The last decade, the last 10 Super Bowls, 6 underdogs have won outright, 7 underdogs have covered. Only one game has the spread factored in. That was Super Bowl 56 between the Bengals and the Rams, since he covered as a 4.5-point underdog. But when you look at the dogs winning outright, 5 of those 6 games, the total went over. 47.5 is the number for Super Bowl 58. He's Joe Lisi. I'm Ben Stevens. We'll talk to you tomorrow, live right here on Football Full Circle at noon Eastern.